Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, President Obama takes to the airwaves to outline his stand against ISIS. Two analysts will offer their views on his remarks. And we'll hear about strategy in the social media war on ISIS.
If you're just going about willy-nilly shutting them down, you actually might be shutting down important avenues to learn about the enemy.
Later, a new movie looks at the story that inspired Herman Melville's literary classic, Moby Dick. It's right here on The Voice of America. In a rare Oval Office address, President Obama has spoken out about his approach to the war against terrorism. My colleague Victor Beatty is watching all this. Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, the president sought to reassure the American people that his administration remains committed to defeating the Islamic State, what he refers to as ISIL, in the wake of last week's mass shooting in San Bernardino, California, that left 14 dead and 21 wounded. U.S.-born Syed Rizwan Farooq and his Pakistani wife, Tashfeen Malik, are blamed for Wednesday's attack. They were killed as they exchanged gunfire with police. Here are some highlights of Mr. Obama's 15-minute address late Sunday from the White House.
So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. But it is clear that the two of them had gone down the dark path of radicalization, embracing a perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. The terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. Many Americans are asking whether we are confronted by a cancer that has no immediate cure. The threat from terrorism is real, but we will overcome it. We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. First, our military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. Second, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground. Third, we're working with friends and allies to stop ISIL's operations, to disrupt plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Fourth, with American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war.
Mr. Obama also called on Congress to tighten gun control measures, put in place stronger screening of those who enter the country without a visa, and called on Muslim leaders to reject the ideology of groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State that lead to radicalization. I asked foreign policy analyst Jonathan Edelman at the University of Denver what motivated the president to take to the airwaves in that Sunday night broadcast.
This is only the third time he's ever done this. And I think that the fact that after Paris and after Charlie Hebdo in France, and now what happened here in San Bernardino, the American people are rightfully alarmed about the possibilities that this could happen. So I think he wanted to, A, reassure the American people, and secondly, he wanted to make clear that he was labeling this an act of terrorism and that he was on top of the situation. And I think the other reason is very simple. There is a presidential election next year. The White House is clearly backing Hillary Clinton with some reservations. And they understood that if you look at the polling data, that this has actually been pushing the Republicans up. So I think there were political reasons, maybe personal reasons, and also that he genuinely saw that this was terrorism and that something needed to be done.
Mr. Obama said the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. Terrorists are turning to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. Do you see a new phase?
Yes, there is terrorism in America without political cause, but much of the serious terrorism, whether it's 9/11 or it was the two cases in Paris, what happened in San Bernardino, were committed by one particular group dedicated to ISIS.
Mr. Obama said the Islamic State does not speak for Islam. They are a tiny fraction of more than a billion Muslims. But he said Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like Islamic State and al-Qaeda promote. What responsibility does the Muslim world have in this matter?
In one level, he's totally correct. I mean, it is a minority group, but on the other hand, it is something that does tremendous damage to Islam in the West. And so I think that the president should be commended for making a first step, but it really needs to be carried further. I think that the moderate Muslims, if they will continue what they've started to, which is to speak out, could have a very major impact on helping to prevent this, just as important as anything that the 16 intelligence agencies in the United States could possibly do.
Jonathan Adelman says intelligence and law enforcement authorities possessed little or no information on the attackers that would have alerted them prior to last week's attack. Middle East analyst Stephen Zunis at the University of San Francisco welcomed the speech as a clearer articulation of Obama administration policy toward defeating the IS group. He explained what the U.S. government's goals now appear to be.
Continuing to improve intelligence and interdiction, to accelerate support for allied forces, both the Iraqi government, various Kurdish militia. There'll be continued U.S. airstrikes and occasionally paramilitary operations, as well as American advisors on the ground who will help facilitate some of the military actions by the Iraqi armed forces, the Kurdish forces, and various Syrian groups.
Stephen, one of his goals is to disrupt plots, cut off financing by Islamic State, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Is that possible?
Well, certainly. I think cutting off the financial flow that supports ISIS's operations is a critical role, working with the Turkish government and others to stop the smuggling routes, the flow of oil, for example, and other black market materials. Also, of course, a major source of income for ISIS is the taxes, the money extorted from people under ISIS control.
Will this speech give greater U.S. impetus to a political solution to Syria?
Well, certainly this is a part of it. And the United States has begun to recognize that as much as we hate to admit it, as brutal as the Assad regime is, it will not be deposed anytime real soon. And there may have to be a more gradual transition to a more inclusive governing structure.
Meanwhile, some Republicans reacted to the speech, calling it ineffective. Presidential hopeful Senator Marco Rubio said nothing in it is going to assuage people's fears. Even fellow Democrat and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton acknowledged before Mr. Obama's remarks that the U.S. is not winning the fight against the Islamic State. Meanwhile, a new poll shows 68% of Americans describe the U.S. military response has not been aggressive enough. Thousands of San Bernardino County employees are returning to work Monday for the first time following last Wednesday's shootings.
Thank you, Victor.
Thank you, Susan.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
To many of us, there's nothing quite as refreshing as biting into a nice, ripe, juicy peach. According to a new study by U.S. and Chinese scientists, peaches have been enjoyed by our ancient ancestors long before the arrival of modern humans. 8 well-preserved, fossilized peach pits from more than 2.5 million years ago were found for the first time in southwest China. The researchers say that the ancient peach pits appear to be nearly identical to those from modern peaches. Published in the journal Scientific Reports, the study suggests that peaches evolved through natural selection long before modern humans domesticated the fruit. While new and larger-sized varieties have been developed over the years, the study shows that animals and ultimately early hominids ate the ancient wild peaches and played an important role in its evolution. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
With a look at what's going on the web today concerning President Obama's address is our social media reporter, Olin Akasholu. Welcome, Olin.
Hi, Susan. Well, there were a lot of people who said they watched President Obama's speech last night, and it actually became a trending topic yesterday as people started to anticipate what he would say. And then after his address, people tweeted their thoughts using hashtag ObamaSpeech. And more than 70,000 people used this hashtag, according to Topsy. Although there were a few people that tweeted positively about the speech, overall, it seemed like there were more people using the hashtag to berate the president. characterizing his speech as, well, just another Obama speech. A lot of people also saying they felt like the president was lecturing his audience last night. Some conservatives outraged that he brought gun control into the speech. So the reaction was a little bit mixed, but the negative voices were definitely a little bit louder in the Twitter sphere.
Well, any tweets you found particularly interesting?
Yes, I brought a few tweets with me to read. This one is from MSNBC journalist Carol Roth. Using the handle at Carol J.S. Roth, she tweeted, "Our strategy is we are going to review our strategy. Hashtag Obama speech." Former New York Governor George Pataki, he tweeted, hashtag Obama speech was as believable as a hostage video. Pathetic response to the worst attack on U.S. since 9/11. Eric Nagel, a producer for Opie and Jim Norton's show on Sirius XM Radio, he tweeted, "The President of the United States addressed the nation like a customer care caller. We know about the problem and are working on it." Another one comes from Twitter user at Southern Keeks. She tweeted, "Obama's speech is over, yet I feel like not much will change in addressing terror, only in restricting freedoms of law-abiding citizens."
Well, thank you, Olin, for that report.
You bet, Susan.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Coming up on International Edition, trying to face off with ISIS in social media. And a whaler crew sets off to harvest whales in a new look at an old tale. Last month's ISIS-led terror attacks in Paris have spurred Western political leaders to try and craft a comprehensive strategy for defeating the militant group on the battlefields of Syria and Iraq. They also reminded many observers that more needs to be done to attack the group where it has a sizable foothold, online. International Edition's Doug Bernard covers the cyber world for us and joins me now. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. First off, what is being done to take the online battle to ISIS?
Well, not enough, and that's according to every analyst I spoke with. The U.S. State Department has been trying to counter some of these messages, either the ISIS narrative of pleasant life in ISIS-controlled regions or those very violent incitements to commit, you know, terrorist acts and that kind of thing. But really, those efforts have just not really amounted to very much. And so there's a sense that more needs to be done. And I think right now people are really struggling to figure out what that more is.
It's said ISIS has used social media very successfully so far.
Yes.
What are they doing right and what can be done to counter that?
You know, interestingly, two of the things they've done right is they have thousands upon thousands of social media accounts across a variety of platforms. Twitter is one of the most prominent, but just one. What happens there is those thousands of accounts that pop up and submerge and pop up again kind of mutually reinforce a message, so it kind of pushes Twitter or social media in general to make it appear that something is going viral, even when it may not be. But something else that they're doing right, one researcher I spoke with who studies online virality, what makes things sort of explode online, her research suggests that maybe the most important predictor are emotions, and specifically the emotion of anger. If you see something that gets your heart racing and really kind of makes you flush with anger, believe it or not, you're much more likely to share that. And of course, thinking back to a lot of those ISIS social media posts, that is exactly what they're doing.
Well, you mentioned another time you were talking to me about Anonymous going to war with ISIS. What have they done so far, and what are the concerns about their involvement?
So far, Anonymous has had some measure of success. They've taken down maybe 5,000 or so Twitter accounts. They're planning what's called an International Day of Rage on December 11th, where they're encouraging people to kind of go out and troll ISIS. But really, these kinds of efforts are more nuisance than they are really kind of fundamentally attacking ISIS online. And one researcher I spoke with, he's a former member of Anonymous, but now he's working more closely with the FBI and other U.S. Intelligence agencies. He says, actually, there's a tremendous amount of valuable intelligence that can be gleaned from these ISIS-backed social media accounts. And so if you're just going about willy-nilly shutting them down, you actually might be shutting down important avenues to learn about the enemy.
That's very interesting. By trying to stop them, they're actually closing avenues to get information on ISIS.
That's exactly right. And one analyst I spoke with, J.M. Berger, said, look, it's not all or nothing. You still can restrict what they're doing online, not give them an open playing field, but you have to be smart about it and not go after those kind of nodes on the web that are really actually going to help people discover what specifically ISIS is doing and who specifically is doing it.
Okay, thank you very much, Doug.
You bet.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
A new film from Academy Award-winning director Ron Howard, In the Heart of the Sea, stars Chris Hemsworth as the first mate of an ill-fated whaling ship. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the movie looks at the story that inspired Herman Melville's literary classic, Moby Dick.
In the autumn of 1820, the whaler Essex and its crew set off to find and harvest whales. Whale oil powered the Industrial Revolution and lighted the world's cities. The Nantucket-based Essex sailed first to South America, but finding the hunting poor, headed to the middle of the Pacific. By November 20th, the ship's crew had harpooned whales, but one of their boats had been damaged. As First Mate Owen Chase, played in the film by Chris Hemsworth, was repairing the damaged boat, a huge male sperm whale rammed and sank the Essex.
Mr. Chase!
God damn it.
Fine, Mr. Lawrence.
What happened next became the stuff of nightmares. Chase, the Essex's Captain George Pollard Jr., and their remaining crew spent 3 months in the middle of the Pacific. Before the survivors were rescued, they would resort to cannibalism to stay alive. To portray their ordeal, Hemsworth, normally known for his massive physique as the Marvel comic hero Thor, had to go on a 500-calorie-a-day diet. A photo of the emaciated Australian actor went viral on Instagram. At the film's premiere, he said that everyone was dedicated to showing the suffering of the men of the Essex.
Yeah, we wanted to sort of show a frame of the film and what we were going through and a portion of sort of what that experience was like. And, it was hard work getting down to that weight for all of us, but we had a pretty tight unit. You know, all the cast were doing it, so it was a lot of support as opposed to doing it on your own.
Tom Holland, who plays young seaman Thomas Nickerson, says that the director, Ron Howard, strove for authenticity in everything, which meant that everyone had to look like they were starving.
This is a true story about real people
and we had a duty as actors to do justice to these characters. And Ron made sure that every aspect of this film was authentic, so that meant we had to starve, learn how to sail, really go out to sea. So it was pretty grueling, but, you know, all for a good reason.
In the Heart of the Sea is being released as Japan is sending whaling ships to the Antarctic in a controversial culling, which Tokyo says is scientific research. Director Ron Howard says his movie does not aim to glorify killing whales, but to reflect its time.
Obviously, you look at our movie through the prism of history, but I think if you also watch it, you'll see that it's not a pro-whaling movie that's meant to romanticize the process. It acknowledges the brutality, but it also recognizes the truth that was the energy industry of its day, and that's kind of a shocking thing to think about.
In the Heart of the Sea also stars Ben Whishaw as a young Herman Melville, who would later use the Essex's sinking as the inspiration for his novel, Moby Dick. The movie is rated PG for violence and thematic elements. In the Heart of the Sea opens in the United States December 11th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
People of the Jewish faith around the world have begun celebrating Hanukkah, an 8-day festival that commemorates ancient miracles and symbolizes triumph over oppression. The holiday began after sundown Sunday, with families gathering to light the first nightly candle of a ceremonial candelabra and to exchange gifts. The menorah is the traditional candelabra used to celebrate the holiday that commemorates the 2nd century BC victory of Judah Maccabee and his followers in a revolt in ancient Judea. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu attended an annual ceremony at the Western Wall in the Old City area of Jerusalem, considered the holiest site for Jews to pray. So, everybody, happy Hanukkah. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury has targeted significant Hezbollah procurement facilitators responsible for providing material support to enhance the group's military and terrorist capabilities. As part of the action taken in early November, the U.S. designated Hezbollah procurement agent Fadi Hussein Sirhan, his company Vatek Saral, as well as Hezbollah procurement agent Adel Mohammed Cherry and his company Lehua Electronics Field Company Limited. The U.S. also designated two companies owned or controlled by specially designated global terrorist and Hezbollah procurement agent Ali Zaitar. The Treasury Department's actions against these two individuals and four companies were taken pursuant to Executive Order 13224, which targets terrorists and those providing support to terrorists or acts of terrorism. As a result of this action, all assets of these individuals and companies that are under the jurisdiction of the United States or in the control of U.S. persons are frozen, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. These designations are part of ongoing efforts to target Hezbollah and its supporters under Executive Order 13224, which have recently included actions against a key Hezbollah financial support network in Lebanon and Iraq, among numerous other designations. Hezbollah is a dangerous, destabilizing terrorist group, and Treasury is determined to maintain maximum pressure on this organization by targeting its many revenue streams, said Adam Zubin, acting Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. The U.S. action, he noted, highlights Hezbollah's exploitation of the commercial sector to support its military capabilities and facilitate acts of terrorism. The U.S. Treasury will pursue any individual or company providing support for this violent group.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.